Hi, my name is John Ormond. I'm a program manager on the Azure Networking Engineering team, focusing mostly on ExpressRoute and Enterprise Scenario. And today I'll be talking about connectivity to the Microsoft Cloud. We are looking at folks who have some good experience with Azure, even though this is an intro course, and for people who will actually be implementing ExpressRoute as we get into the deeper in the session. So one of the first things I like to tell folks is the best thing you can do for your future with Azure is to learn the Azure.com website. So actually looking at on this page, you can see a documents and a resources links at the top of Azure.com. The documentation link is actually written by the engineering team inside Azure. So you can pick the exact area and focus topic that you want and get up to the minute information written by the people who are actually writing the actual software itself. And resources, you can get downloads, templates, all sorts of ARM and resources there that will really help out anything you want to deploy to Azure. So it's really important that that you understand this site, especially those two areas of it, to really get the latest and greatest information on Azure. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is SDN, Software Defined Networking. And this is a very high level overview. Again, not specific to Microsoft or Azure, but just software-defined networking in general. You can look at more on Wikipedia to get this information, but the idea is that traditionally networking has been in a fixed router or switch or a physical device, and the different pieces of that device were all inside that one physical component. And with software-defined networking, we're actually splitting that stuff out between the data plane, the control plane, and the management plane. And by separating that stuff out, we can do the hyperscale needed for the cloud, and the data plane can become really generic or even dumb hardware, and the intelligence can be at those higher level planes in different forms. So the controller and the management plane can actually be done by the Azure Fabric as opposed to being physically on a router. It also lets you virtualize all of this stuff. So again, it allows us to scale out in the data centers and do the hyperscale that's required to do Azure, and also to give that isolation per customer and still make it feel like that is their own network, but be virtualized and abstracted inside the physical network that is the Azure data center. So we do this by having the SDN layer, the controller, split from the data plane, and then network function virtualization, which would be things like DNS or DHCP, those higher level functions, happen higher up in the stack. And again, these are all separated out from that physical piece of network gear, and they can be virtualized. Sometimes they're physical, sometimes they're virtual. In Azure, everything is virtualized, but SDN in general, they can be virtualized at any of these stages. So some of the things that define classic networking versus SDN, the biggest thing in here is the dynamicity. So having fixed gear, you're really fixed by that physical hardware, where if it's virtualized, you can have that physical hardware in certain places, but that the logical topology can really be reconfigured on the fly as needed to give lots of little independent virtual networks as opposed to one big fixed network. And that's really the power that we're harnessing with Azure. The other great thing about software-defined networking is once the physical is deployed, and that can take a long time to do physical deployments, the virtual stuff can be deployed in minutes, and it can be automated, highly automated. That's one of the biggest advantages when you have a hyperscale network is you've got to have everything automated, and the software-defined networking, SDN, is what allows us to do that. So I use the term virtual network, and what does a virtual network mean? Again, here's again, thanks to Wikipedia, a very generic definition of a virtual network. But you can think of it sort of like virtual machines. So, you know, a physical server can run many virtual machines, and each one of those virtual machines doesn't, I don't know, realize, generally speaking, that it is a virtual machine. It feels just like a physical machine. Same thing with a network. Inside that physical network, you've got these little virtual isolated bubbles, if you will, that are independent networks. In this slide, we see a blue network and a red network. Now, they exist together on the same physical infrastructure, but they have no awareness or connectivity between the red and the blue network. They're completely isolated and unaware of each other, unless we do some routing things to make them paired with each other. And that's at a very high level what Azure is doing. A simple example of a VPN can be a VPN where you've got a single laptop connected across the internet to a network on the other side. The private network basically ignores, or you actually don't see the internet, but it is writing across the internet, but it's a private network tunnel within that other bigger internet network. And that's what virtual networking is all about. It's about using a physical infrastructure and having a virtual construct living inside or living through that physical network. And that virtual network is isolated in and of itself. So how does that then grow up into the Azure network? So first I'd like to talk about the Azure momentum. Hopefully you've seen this slide or some of these data points. Azure is large, right? 2 trillion IoT events each month. That figure blows my mind. 500 million Active Directory users in Azure. So there is a lot of activity going on. This all runs on the Azure network. I think today we have around, this says 24, I believe we're actually at 26 right now. We've added some GovClouds. We've also announced regions in the UK, Germany, and Korea, so we'll be getting to 32 regions. So we're constantly growing the Azure data centers, and data centers have to have a network to support them. So we're constantly growing the Azure network as well. When we look at the network, each one of these dots is either an internet presence or an edge node or an express route location or an actual data center itself. So hundreds of points of presence around the world, and these are all connected by Microsoft's physical global network. Within our data centers, as you can see on the slide, 1.4 million miles of fiber. So that's pretty impressive. Now, if you look at this map, a lot of the things that we'll be talking about today and in future sessions will be in the lower right-hand corner, highlighted in yellow here, around networking. This is mostly related to private networking, but some of these services are also available for SaaS, or not for SaaS, but for PaaS services as well as IaaS. So looking at the big picture of the network, it starts with the Azure Virtual Network. That is actually an Azure object or component. By default, it is isolated. So this network is private and not connected to the internet. So it will not accept inbound internet traffic. It will allow outbound traffic to the internet, but not inbound. Also, a virtual network cannot talk to other virtual networks by default. We can do things to enable it, but by default, out of the box, a virtual network cannot talk to another virtual network, even if it's in the same subscription. That becomes really important when we start to talk about security. We can easily allow that traffic, but it has to be done intentionally by the user. By default, these things are isolated. Now, inside a virtual network, we have subnets, and these subnets allow traffic by default. We can break it and change how it flows using user-defined routing and network security groups, but by default, subnet to subnet traffic inside the same virtual network is allowed in Azure. Now, how do we connect into this? We can allow things into the front end, or the internet side, if you will, using public IPs or ACLs, load balancers, things of that nature that allow traffic into our virtual network. This is how users could get to our web server living in that virtual network. We can also have back-end connectivity. Things such as ExpressRoute, which will be heavily covered in later sessions, but also site-to-site VPN, point-to-site VPNs can also be used for back-end connectivity. And this is really about bridging the on-premise corporate or school or on-prem network up into that network into the cloud. So this is not using the internet address space, but private IP address space. It may go over the internet in the case of a point-to-site or site-to-site connection, but those are virtual private networks tunneling through the internet up into Azure. So they are technically a back-end connection, a private connection. With ExpressRoute, we've taken that traffic completely off of the internet, and we use exclusively a service provider network and the Microsoft network. So the customer's traffic never touches the internet with an ExpressRoute connectivity. So these are kind of the ways into and out of the virtual network, which again is the foundation to private networking in Azure. So to change topics radically, there's been some changes in Azure recently, moving from RDFE or Classic or the version 1. There's a lot of different names for it. I'll use Classic most of the time. And we've migrated now to the ARM or the Azure Resource Manager model. These are deployment models on how resources are can actually automated through an automated fashion be deployed into Azure. So in the olden days, a year ago or so, we had everything was based on a cloud service, and if you looked at the Azure portal, it was all based on a storage, and everything for your storage account would be on that blade. You'd have virtual networks and all your VMs would be in that blade. And what would happen is if you had an application, or even better, if you had two applications and you went and looked at your VMs, you'd see both VMs commingled together. You wouldn't be able to tell which is app A, which is app B. And then you would not be able to tell for app A, what are all the resources? You'd have to go to the network tab and the storage tab and each different resource tab to get a view of that. So everything was through the lens of the different types of object in Azure. And as a result, it made management of multiple things difficult. So for small deployments, it worked okay. But as soon as you started to get more scale, it became very difficult to manage your applications, to get total cost of ownership of your application, to lock down your applications. The other big thing, we didn't have role-based access controls or RBAC. All of these things are enabled with RBAC or with ARM, and ARM is also much more extensible, as I'll explain here in a minute. So this is what the old portal looks like. You can see the blades on the left-hand side that were resource-focused, not they were object, like VM or storage focused, not resource focused. So now we actually have the resource model. And what happens is everything now lives inside of a resource group. That's symbolized by the little cube icon inside of braces. With this, we now have software controllers. If you remember software-defined networking, it's the blade in, or the layer in the middle, that a controller will actually go out and manipulate these objects in the data center. And as a result, we can spread the control out better so that we have fewer single points of failure, or actually no single points of failure, and a more distributed control model. Also, we can modularly add these resource providers, as we call them, the controllers, and add more and more new features, and they just dovetail right into the existing models very well. So in this case, you can see across the bottom of this slide, SRP, which is the storage resource provider. CRP is the compute resource provider. NRP is the network resource provider. There are, gosh, I'd say probably 30 to 40 different resource providers that you can call objects within. And as a result, everything about your app lives in this resource group. So if this was app A, I could see everything involved with app A. I could see another resource group for app B that had all of the resources for that app. And it's much easier to see what my whole app looks like and to get a total cost of ownership around this one resource group. Also, the resource group is defined by the user. It doesn't have to be an app. It could be a division of a company. It could be for one tier of an app, and you could have many resource groups for a single app. It's really up to the user to define how many resource groups they want and what they want to put into it. It's also a nice security boundary just from a permissioning perspective. So you could have a resource group that was all of your network objects and just give the network team access to that resource group and say, hey, compute guys and developers, you don't have access to the network resource group. You have to go talk to the network team to affect change there. So it's a much better way to segment out applications and resources in Azure. It's much cleaner once you understand the paradigm. This led to a new portal, the ARM portal, And this has blades that fly out, but again, everything's based on the resource group. As you can see here, the leftmost blade is a resource group, and I clicked on one that flew out, and I can see everything in that resource group. When I click on an object, then the blades just continue to pop out to the right, to the right, to the right. That is using basically the new portal. Both the old portal and the new portal are all based on REST APIs, RESTful Interface. It looks like a URL like you type into your web browser, and the old one is broken up of a service endpoint, management.core.windows.net, a subscription, GUID, the service that you're trying to hit, and then some GUID that identifies that object, and then the attribute. This is basic REST, if you're a programmer and you're familiar with REST calls. Basic functionality, but with the GUIDs in there, it can be a little difficult to read, and again, it's focused on this, in this instance, is networking dedicated circuits, which are express route circuits. With REST, you have some standard methods, and there's some other components to it. Anytime you use a web browser and you pull up a web page, that's actually a bunch of GET requests, and it's just pulling all this information out to present that web page. Azure is no different. When you use the portal, you're generating these REST commands that go do operations on your Azure attributes or resources. When you use PowerShell, it generates a REST command. Everything eventually devolves into a REST command that gets applied against the REST interface. In this case, management.core.windows.net, which is the classic. So there are tools that you can use to help see that. Now, what does the new ARM REST call look like? You can see the difference here. If you're a programmer, this is important. If you're not a programmer, probably not as impactful. We still have the subscription GUID, so we still have a big, long GUID that we have to use for the subscription ID. But here's where it gets different. So we actually call the resource group now. So if it was app A, this would actually be app A, or whatever we actually called that resource group. So even in the API, there is that concept of a resource group, and everything is grouped like that. Then we call the resource provider. If you recall, the storage resource provider, network resource provider, compute resource provider, we actually call that out almost as if it was a DLL. And then inside that DLL, I put that in quotes, we have, in this case, virtual machines that then we can go down and talk about the object and do other things with that object. But it's a very modular and componentized way that it's easy for us to add more resource providers and more objects into this and continue to expand the Azure Fabric as new capabilities and features release. As I said, there were some, I think we're up to like 30. This is just some of the different resource providers that we can call with the new ARM API model. Something else that's really cool about ARM, and it makes it a huge differentiator from Classic. In the Classic world, you would submit a request. It would go to Azure. Azure would implement it, and it would come back with a response, and then you would execute the next request. And it all went through that main API, and you had to do it one line or one object or one call at a time. It was very serial, very time-consuming. With the Azure Resource Manager model, there actually is a resource manager. And so what happens now is if you're a user, as depicted in this slide, you're going to make a request. Let's say that we want to, delete a VM. So yeah, this case is delete a VM. So if we want to delete a VM, let's say that VM is in Azure East, US, and the user is somewhere in Europe. They'll do that REST call, even if they're using the portal or PowerShell, whatever, it eventually gets into a REST call that gets sent out to DNS that says, where's the closest Azure endpoint for me to submit this request? In this case, it goes out to DNS, and DNS comes back and says that Western Europe is actually the closest place. So he's going to submit that request. It's going to automatically be submitted to the closest endpoint. So that request to delete the VM goes to West Europe, even though it's East US is where the VM lives. So the ARM service endpoint, which is kind of the management plane, will look at that request and see, oh, this is going to affect a VM, and it's going to look up that VM and say, oh, that's in the East US. then the ARM endpoint is going to make another REST call behind the scenes to that resource provider, the compute resource provider in East US. The East US compute resource provider controls all of the resources in the East US for compute, and it says, oh, you want me to go delete this machine? And it goes, deletes that machine. Then it responds back to the service endpoint and says, hey, I did what you asked. And then it goes back to the user and says, it's all done. That's all well and good, but where this gets to become magical, to use a little hyperbole, is you can submit a template to that service endpoint that says, I want to build a VM that has a storage account, a public IP, a network card, lives on a network, it has all of these attributes, and you can put that into a JSON file. JSON is a language or a data description, sort of like XML. It's the more modern version of XML that a lot of applications and websites are using now. And it's a way to transfer data in text across the web very easily. So you can use a JSON template to say, I want this environment. And you can submit that to your nearest ARM service endpoint. It will look at that template, and that will probably be potentially 10, 20, 30, even 100 REST calls. And it could be to compute resource providers, network resource providers. Well, you don't have to make all those, you know, potentially 100 REST calls. You make that one call to the ARM service endpoint with your template, and then it will go to all of the different resource providers in the correct region and make all of the individual calls and come back when everything is done and with either success or fail message. Hopefully with a good error message that will let you diagnose failure, but most of the time I've been very successful using ARM templates, and it has made my life a lot easier, especially with complex deployments where you can just describe everything in a template, send it up to the ARM manager, and the resource manager takes care of all of the dependencies and interdependencies of all the resources in Azure to make that deployment real. So it's really a huge benefit over the classic model where, again, everything was serial, one step at a time. The important thing to note is that ARM is where most of our dev energy is going to. So as new features come out, they're going to be in ARM. They may or may not be released in classic or in RDFE. So to use a lot of the new features, you have to be in ARM. Right now, they are very different worlds. However, we are working on migration scenarios and capabilities to help with that. The last thing, and I touched on this a little bit, everything is a REST call, even with Classic, even with ARM. If you're using direct APIs, PowerShell, Azure, or CLI, you can get there. The nice thing is that the command or the logic is in that one API area, and everything else is just generating that REST call. So you can use the tool that you want to use. If you're a programmer, you can go straight to the API. If you're an operations person, you can go straight to, you can use PowerShell or whatever language you're using most often to do your scripting commands. If you're an administrator, you can go to the portal. And even if you're on Linux or Macintosh, you can use CLI, which is short for command line interface, which runs on Windows and Linux variants. So whatever language or whatever operating system, I should say, whatever operating system you want to use, you have the ability to generate these REST API calls using something that's more familiar to you. So really quickly, on the old PowerShell, it was imperative, meaning you had to declare everything step by step. You'll know this is PowerShell we're looking at now. You'll know old PowerShell because it says Azure. New PowerShell says Azure RM, Resource Manager. This is the new PowerShell. It's got the RM in it, but this is an imperative, so you can still do it the old way. You can still call every line in and of itself if you wish. However, we also have the new declarative stuff where you can say, hey, here's the template. I'm going to declare an environment. This whole template describes what I want to be in Azure, and you just go do the needful. Here's the template. You make it happen. You deploy it, and Azure will take care of the details of making that template a reality in that deployment. So it's a really rich tool to be used. There's also, as I mentioned at the beginning of this session, on Azure.com, on the Resources tab, there are ARM templates out there. One of the things that I really like to do when I'm building a new template is I look for a template that already exists and steal that piece of it. So if I know I need to add load balancing, I'll look for someone else who's done a load balancing template, steal that little load balancing bit, and add it to my template. And I'll take the bits and pieces from stuff that have been pre-written and build out the full template. So Azure.com, you can search for them. They're all on GitHub, so they're publicly available. Just Azure.com resources under the template section, you can search and find the exact right template that will give you the information that you need. So it's really a super strong tool to be used. Inside the OnArm template, this is JSON. I talked about it earlier. So it's a formatted way to get data between computers in clear text. There are some key sections. First is parameters. Every time you run the template, these parameters will be prompted. So if you run this from PowerShell, PowerShell will prompt you, in this case, for a username, for an admin password, for an OS version. If you submit this to the portal, it will bring up a blade that has these fields that says, give me a username, a password, an OS version. So these are the ways that you can get user interactive information at runtime for your template. There's also variables. These are things that are more fixed. So they can be changed in the template, but you don't get the opportunity to change them at runtime when that template is deployed. So things that change less. And then inside the template, you've got the actual resource itself. So here, if you recall back to the REST URL that I showed, we still call a resource provider, in this case, the compute resource, virtual machine. We give it a name. This actually is being pulled from the variables in the previous section in the template. And then depends on. This is really powerful. So you can't build this virtual machine until you've got a storage account and a NIC. So the resource manager is smart enough to say, well, I'm going to not build this VM until I go check on these resources. And if they're not built, I'm going to look in the template for where they're defined, and I'm going to go request that they get built. Once all of the dependencies are built, then it comes back here and continues on with the virtual machine build. So very, very powerful. And there are multiple ways that a template can be deployed, as I just described. First is PowerShell or CLI. You can also do it through the portal. And actually, on GitHub itself, there's a Deploy to Azure button that will then launch it into the portal. So lots of ways to do this. Again, the CLI component is also available. This can be installed on Linux and Mac and also Windows to run command line scripts on those operating systems. So that's it for this session. I hope this was valuable. Thank you for watching, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.